Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Udvigna. Nodvigna chito vyashaneshu nispriha.
Nodvigna chito vyashaneshu nispriha.
Sruteshu tristeshu guneshva vastudrik. Dantendriya prana sarira di sada.
Dantendriya prana sarira di sada.
Prashanta kamo rakita suro suraha. Although Prahlad Maharaj was born in a family of asuras, he himself was not an asura, but a great devotee of Lord Vishnu. Unlike the other asuras, he was never envious of Vaishnavas. He was not agitated when put into danger, and he was neither directly nor indirectly interested in the fruit of activities described in the Vedas. Indeed, he considered everything material to be useless, and therefore he was completely devoid of material desires. He always controlled his senses and life air, and being of steady intelligence and determination, he subdued all lusty desires. Purport. By His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In this verse, we discover that a man is not qualified or disqualified simply by birth. Prahlad Maharaj was an asura by birth, yet he possessed all the qualities of a perfect Brahman. Brahmanya Shila Sampanaha. Anyone can become a fully qualified Brahman under the direction of a spiritual master. Prahlad Maharaj provided a vivid example of how to think of this spiritual master and accept his directions calmly. Although Prahlad Maharaj was born in a family of asuras, he himself was not an asura, but a great devotee of Lord Vishnu. Unlike the other asuras, he was never envious of Vaishnavas. He was not agitated when he was put into danger, and he was neither directly nor indirectly interested in the fruitive activities described in the Vedas. Indeed, he considered everything material to be useless, and therefore he completely was devoid of material desires. He always controlled his senses and life air, and being of steady intelligence and determination, he subdued all lusty desires. We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 4, entitled Hiranyakashipu Terrorizes the Universe. Text 33. The qualities of Sri Prahlad Maharaj are being summarized herein. And by studying them carefully, we can truly understand what is a Vaishnava. We may read volumes and volumes of philosophy, memorize many teachings, and even have the power to speak in such a way that people are mesmerized. But all of that may not bring the fruit of what actually pleases Krishna. In these few verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is clear what is expected of us. What are the characteristics that we must sincerely strive to live by in our lives? As Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has spoken, one cannot really understand Krishna or how to love Krishna even by studying scrutinizingly all of the various scriptures. But one can understand by observing the life of a pure devotee. Mahajano yena katasa bandha. This is the path of perfection. To follow in the footsteps of Mahajans. Because this is the culmination, the essence of philosophy. It is what all the philosophy is trying to bring us to achieve. These personal qualities. Personal qualities do not necessarily come by getting a position. You may be a temple president, you may be a Sankirtan leader, you may be a counselor. You may be a GBC, a guru, anything. But you will not necessarily adopt those qualities just by having a position. And it is these qualities that attract Krishna. It is these characteristics that actually please Krishna. They are not easily achieved. In fact, if we study these verses describing Prahlad Maharaj, it's very difficult. But yet, we must strive, we must pray, we must perform our service, study the scriptures, do our sadhana and everything else with the aim of developing these qualities. Narada Muni tells the qualities of Prahlad. He was completely cultured as a qualified Brahmin. Srila Prabhupada has told us that this movement is especially meant to create a class of true Brahmins. And for one who is a Vaishnava, all the essential, real qualities of a Brahmin are naturally there. even if he may not be performing the occupational duty of a Brahmin. Having very good character and being determined to understand the absolute truth. Having a learning, having a yearning, having an eagerness, determination to understand the absolute truth. In school, for most people, if they want to do well in their grades, there has to be a determination to understand the subject. When we read the books, when we come to the classes, it should not just be because we're supposed to. It should not simply be for social purposes. Should not be to catch extra rest. We should come to class with a determination to understand the absolute truth. If you're determined, you'll be awake. To be determined means to be willing to fight all opposition and all obstacles. That is a quality of determination. He had full control of senses and mind. And he was kind to everyone. It explains his relationships with others. How, and all of these qualities can only take place in a person who is not envious. Or at least, at the beginning stages, not acting according to the influences of envy that may be lurking within our hearts. To respectable persons, Prahlad Maharaj acted like a menial servant. This is very interesting. He's the favorite son of the king. Usually someone in that position is naturally very proud. But to all respectable people, Prahlad Maharaj acted like a menial servant, which means he was willing to serve them in any way. Menial servant does not discriminate what is high service, what is low service, what is a prestigious thing to do, what is something that people may even criticize you for doing. Menial servant means you'll do whatever is required to serve that person, to please that person, to those who were poor. Prahlad was just like their father. This is very profound. A father doesn't just give something in charity. A father really cares. Yes? If your child is sick, does the father just say, here's some medicine, just you're driving in a car, roll down the window, here's some medicine, my son, and drive on. A father really cares with his heart for the welfare of that person. And really willing to extend himself and even make sacrifices. Prahlad Maharaj saw every poor, suffering person as his own son. And what's so beautiful about it is he himself was only 5 years old. This was the standard of his devotion. Practically everybody that was poor was probably old enough to be his father, but he was seeing them as his own children. Why? Because he had something to help them, to serve them. It's not just about money. It's about respect also. We read about Srila Prabhupada when he was living in the Bowery, Skid Row, ghetto of Manhattan Island. There were people who were really, really poor. Not only poor in economically, but poor in every sense of morality. They were alcoholics, drug addicts, sleeping on the roads, had nothing. Due to their addictions, they just lost everything they had. Completely, totally rejected by the whole society. People wouldn't even want to look at them, see them. They were disgusting. Srila Prabhupada had less money than they did. Yes? He had practically nothing. But yet, he was intoxicated with Krishna's love. He would walk amongst them. He always showed respect for them. He always showed honor for them. In fact, he was the only person in the whole universal creation that gave them any respect or honor. They would open the door for him to reciprocate. They would not do that for anyone else. Everyone else, they'd slam the door in their face. Prabhupada, they would open the door. Because he was giving them a sense of dignity. And in giving a person like that a sense of dignity, you're actually giving them the strength to give up their bad habits and improve themselves. Just give them money, you're not really helping them very much. Just give them some medicine, you're not really helping them very much, because the medicine and the money and some food is not going to give them the strength to overcome their suffering, miserable condition. But if you give a person a sense of dignity, you can actually give a person a sense that my life has some value. That there is something in me that is good. I don't see it. Nobody else sees it, but this person sees it, so it must be there. And that can give one the strength to overcome so many obstacles. To come out of Maya and attain Krishna. So yes, Prabhupada was like a father to those people. And little Prahlad, 5 years old, he was also like a father. He respected everyone. He gave honor to the dignity of every living being. Now, how is that possible? From a psychological perspective, we could analyze how it is very, very vital for encouraging a person who is in a very, very depressed condition. But Prahlad, Srila Prabhupada, and the great souls, they are seeing from a different perspective. Vidyavanaya sampane brahmane gavrihastini sunichaiva svapake cha pandita samadarshana. They are seeing the ultimate good in every living being. Whether they are Brahman, or a cow, elephant, dog, or dog eater. Chandala. They're seeing beyond the external dress. Vasamsi junani yatha vihaya. This body is a dress. This mind is also a dress. It's like this body is the outer clothes. The mind is like the underwear. But the soul is the person. Now you may or may not like the person's clothes. And you may not like his underwear. But it's the person that is important. And every living being, who, whatever their designation may be, whatever clothes they may be dressing, they're a part of God. They're Sachidananda. They're eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss. They're our brothers. They're our sisters. Hum bija pratapita. Krishna is the Father. Where everyone is our brother and sister. Everyone's pure. There's love of God there everywhere. If someone sees that in you, sees godliness in you, sees purity in you, sees divine love in you, that person can really encourage you and also empower you. In psychology, psychiatry today, and in various, you know, new type of methods of trying to deal with people's mental problems, there's a sense of giving a person a sense of self-worth. Yes? Giving a person the comfort that I'm important, that I'm valuable. Because in this world of Kali Yuga, there are so many situations that could really be depressive to a person's mind. So therefore, there's like almost a whole movement of just self-care, feeling of self-value. But when that is only on the material plane, it could make you feel better, maybe, temporarily. But it can also inflate your false ego and give you a really illusory sense of your value. But what Prahlad, Srila Prabhupada, or other these great souls, they're not just trying to pump up our depressed ego. They're trying to give us knowledge of who we really are, what we really are, what our real value is. And if you understand your value according to their perspective, you can't think, well, I have real value, but you don't. Yes. With these modern psychological methods, it could bring that. Then now I am feeling self-care, self-value, and I'm better than you. But herein we understand who we really are. And we understand that everybody is like that. Everybody's essence is full of bliss. Everybody's essence is of inconceivable value. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada compares the Vivinamsa, the soul, which is just an infinitesimal little part of Krishna, who is Vibhu, who is unlimited, to a spark. Krishna is like the sun, and the jivas are sometimes compared to little sparks or rays of the sun. Now, from the perspective of a spark, what is the significance of a spark? Hare Krishna. They're so tiny, so small, anu, very, very little. They can't illuminate very much. The farther the spark is away from the fire, the less it glows, the less value it has. But when that spark comes closer and closer and closer and closer to the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani, who is the source of all love, of all devotion, then that spark glows brighter and brighter and brighter. And when that spark is very, very close to Shri Radha Gopinath, it can generate light that could illuminate an entire world and an entire universe. That little infinitesimal spark. So in actually trying to give a person their real sense of self-value, we convince them that you are a spirit soul. You are part and parcel of Krishna. There is pure love in your heart. There is unlimited joy in your heart. Theoretically, that can make a person feel, oh, well, that's nice. But real inner fulfillment has to go beyond the theoretical. Because the situations that come up in life can very much bewilder us from our theoretical understandings of things. But if we convince people of this concept of truth, and then bring them closer and closer and closer to the lotus feet of Sri Radha Gopinath, then their real sense of that little infinitesimal soul starts glowing brighter and brighter and brighter. Its divine qualities, its divine virtues become more and more manifested. And in the spiritual world we find, although there are unlimited jivatmas, how many jivatmas are in the city of Bombay? Just the rats alone are countless. But to speak of the humans and the mosquitoes and all the microbes and other little cockroaches and everything else. How many jivatmas are here? In India, in the earth, in the universe, in the cosmic manifestation. Could human intelligence ever even create a number that could estimate how many jivatmas are in the cosmic manifestation? Yes? It's impossible. Unfathomable. Well, this is just a small little place. This is just the prison. The amount of people in prisons usually is a very small percentage of society. How many jivatmas are in the spiritual world? Goloka Vrindavan. And in the vicinity of Goloka Vrindavan, there is Vrindavan, Svetadvip, and then there is Dwarka and Mathura. Unlimited Vaikuntha planets, and in each Vaikuntha planet there is more living entities than in the whole cosmic manifestation. In each of those Vaikuntha planets. And there are unlimited Vaikuntha planets. And Goloka Vrindavan is the biggest and the best of all of them. How many living entities? But yet, because each living entity, that their heart is so close to Krishna due to love, that Krishna, he can make everyone feel that I love only you. Right? He can make everyone feel that my full love, my full affection, my full attraction is just for you. And that doesn't give you a superior complex over others. If you see Krishna loving someone else, it doesn't make you envious. Why nobody is envious when they see Krishna loving someone else more? Because they're so totally satisfied by Krishna's love for me. And therefore, the more they see Krishna loving someone else, the more it thrills them, gives them happiness. So yes, the closer the soul comes to Krishna, the more the real value of the soul is brought out. So a real father who is trying to help the poor is not only giving them some physical symptomatic relief, but a person who is giving them the knowledge of who they really are and then bringing them closer and closer and closer to Krishna. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given an instruction to all you people from India. Bharata bhumite hoila manusya janmajar janma saratka karakara para upakar. That we should all perform the highest welfare work for human society. And what is that highest welfare work? To bring people closer to Krishna. To feed people, to nourish people on the spiritual platform. And our physical welfare work and our emotional welfare work is always connected to the needs of the soul. That is para upakar. People are hungry. Give them food. They're hungry again. Give them prasad. They'll be hungry again. But in the process of eating that food, you have brought them a little closer to Krishna. You have awakened the soul to its true glory. Hospitalization. Prabhupada in so many ways say we are not interested in hospitals. That is just philanthropy. But if you can give a person medicine, heal a person's sickness, but at the same time put them in an environment where they're souls are being awakened, where they're coming close, where that little, that practically burnt out little tiny spark that's just laying in the dry sand, and it's practically, there's no light at all in it. If you can somehow or other bring it closer, closer, closer to the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna, then that type of philanthropy is para upakar. And ultimately, Cheto Darapana Marajanam Bhava Mahadavagni Nirvapana. The prime benediction for the whole humanity at large is Krishna, who is descended in his name. In all of his fullness, in all of his opulence, Krishna has manifested in his name. So therefore, the greatest charity that we can possibly offer to another, with real care, with real love, is to bring people closer to Krishna by inducing them to take shelter of the holy name. Hare Krishna, Radha and Krishna. We could be close to Krishna in every situation and allow that little soul in our heart to blaze with love, with all good qualities. And the holy name is a method by which we could remain close to Krishna in every situation, everywhere, at all times. Therefore, it is the prime benediction. Radha and Krishna are their names. So this was Prahlad Maharaj. Even though he was a little 5-year-old boy, he cared and loved for the poor like his own father. And it wasn't only the poor in wealth. That is included. But it was the poor in heart. Of course, in the Bible, Jesus said, blessed are the poor in heart. But what he's speaking about, poor in heart, means those who have humble hearts. Those who realize that nothing is mine. Everything is the property of God. The more we realize that, the more we are eager to come closer to God. To his equals, Prahlad Maharaj, he was attached like a sympathetic brother. That means to other Vaishnavas who are equal. Not just a friend. We should have friendships with our God brothers, our God sisters in this way. Friendship. But what is the spirit of this friendship? There was attachment to them, like a sympathetic brother. If someone is your brother and you're sympathetic means you really care about that person. Deep down, to the core of your heart, you really care about that person. Sympathetic brother means his problems are my problems. His success is my success. His joy is my joy. His suffering is my suffering. That's sympathetic. You really care. And as a brother, no matter what. Sympathetic brother. And developing attachment on that level. Mayavadis, they sometimes are against any type of attachment. And sometimes devotees also, because we read so much about vairagya, detachment, that we get this idea that we should be detached from everything, from everyone. But in Vaishnav society, we find here, Prahlad, he is attached to his equals. But he's not attached to exploiting them. He's not attached to them for his sense gratification. He's attached to them because he knows They are his brothers, his sisters. They are Krishna's children. And he's attached to serving them. He's attached to serving them with love. That is how we should try to cultivate relationships with all of our peers. An attachment to serving them with love. Rupa Goswami explains the 6 loving exchanges. To be attached to those exchanges with each other is very good. It's the symptoms of a Mahajan. And he considered his teachers, that means Shiksha Gurus, spiritual masters. Prabhupada says he treated his older god brothers as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. His teachers, his guru, and his older god brothers, he treated them as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And how was he able to do this? He was completely free from unnatural pride. Why doesn't it just say completely free of pride? Why unnatural pride? Because in spiritual life there's pride. But it's natural pride. Natural means based on truth. To be proud of Krishna is natural pride. To be proud of other Vaishnavas for the good things they do because they know they're being empowered by Krishna is natural pride. If you're proud of Krishna, will you not spontaneously be proud of anything Krishna does through someone else? When we glorify Krishna, we're showing our pride in Krishna. Yes? This is my God. This is our God. When we read about Srila Prabhupada, our hearts should swell with pride. Not pride in ourselves, but pride in Prabhupada. And we see anybody serving nicely, being empowered them, we should be swelling with pride. Just see how my God brother, my God sister, how this other Vaishnav, even somebody else's disciples or whatever, how they are empowered by Krishna, Prabhupada and our paramparas to do such nice things. That's natural pride. Because it's focused on Krishna. But false pride, unnatural pride, is when we put ourselves at the center. When Krishna's in the center, that's natural pride. When we put ourselves in the center, that is unnatural pride. Natural pride in Krishna, in Guru, in Vaishnavas, unifies us. Helps us to transcend all envy and disputes. Unnatural pride creates disunity, creates envy, destroys our humility. Natural pride increases our humility. When our pride is with Krishna and others in the center, it makes us humble. When our pride is with ourselves in the center, it makes us egotistic. Arrogant. Now, he was completely free from this unnatural pride that might have arisen from all the good qualities he had. He had good education, riches, beauty, aristocracy, and so on. This is a very, very divine quality. When you have everything and you're not proud. Even a beggar who has nothing is proud. The mind will think of something to be proud of. If you're laying on the side of a sewage ditch with others and a rat comes up, you see, oh, you see, the rats like me better than you. Your mind will think of something to be proud of. It has to. But here, when we find somebody who's wealthy, what happens when you're wealthy? So much power you get from your wealth. And so many people look up to you and ask favors and depend on you because of your wealth. Good education. Very learned, very adept mind to find solutions very quickly. To be able to cite different books, different histories, different equations, whatever it may be. Aristocracy. Beauty. Prahlad was very beautiful. He was so charming. He just attracted everybody by his little beauty. And everything. But he had no unnatural pride. Why? If you put yourself in the center, then you have to be proud of all those things. But if you put Krishna in the center, then you understand. Krishna tells in Gita, whatever opulences are anywhere in this world, in anyone, it is only a spark of my splendor. Punarmushtaka bhava. Krishna can make you a lion, Krishna can make you a mouse. Nothing to be proud of. God is great. And Srimad Bhagavatam tells how great is God. And although Prahlad was born in a family of asuras, he was not an asura. He was a great devotee. And here is a very key sentence that may cause us to tremble. Unlike the other asuras, this is very, very strong language. I don't want to offend you, but these are the words of Prabhupada. These are the words of Sutta Goswami. These are the words of Sukadev Goswami. These are the words of Narada Muni. So I feel bold enough to speak it. Unlike the other asuras, he was never envious of a Vaishnava. What does that mean? Very powerful statement. Do you understand what that means? What are you if you are envious of a Vaishnava? Say it loud. The A at the beginning should be... I'm hearing Sura. So please emphasize the first syllable. According to Srimad Bhagavatam, if you're envious of Vaishnavas, you are Hare Krishna. Somebody doesn't like this. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama.
Now certainly everyone assembled here is a Vaishnav. How many of you have some envy toward another Vaishnav in your heart? You may be a Vaishnav. Now everybody raise their hands. Does that mean everyone's an Asura? So that means if I'm envious of them, I'm not an Asura because they're not Vaishnavas, because they raised their hand. This is the way the mind justifies things. It is an Asura quality. That envy is an Asura quality. And if these anartas, especially the anarta of envy, or lust, anger, pride, greed, illusion, they are also like sparks. If we are not very, very careful to monitor them, to control them, to subdue them, and that takes effort. Then what we'll do is we'll start feeding them. And it will grow, grow, grow. Jayato Vishayan Pung Sang Sangaste Shubajayate. Sangat Sanjayate Kama Kama Kuro Bajayate. At the beginning we contemplate the objects of the senses. We may contemplate envy. We may contemplate greed or pride, any of these things. From such contemplation, attachment develops. From attachment, if we don't curb it, if we don't curb it, if we don't monitor that spark, because now it's growing into a flame, it becomes lust. Lust means a craving. Now we could identify this just as the physical lust. But on a subtle level, all these things are lust. Greed is a type of lust, is it not? Greed is lust for money. Envy is lust to hurt somebody. Pride is a lust for prestige and distinction. First there's contemplation. Anger is a lust for vengeance. Yes? Lust. And then the flame's getting bigger. The warning signals are becoming stronger. We have to do something about this. But if we keep feeding it, lust becomes frustrated into anger. Anger is stirring in our heart. Are we going to do something about it? Are we going to subdue it? Are we going to divert that energy in a positive spiritual way? If not, anger bewilders the memory. That means all the hundreds and hundreds of Srimad Bhagavatam classes where we learn all nice things, and all the times we've read the scriptures, and all the prayers we've offered. Bewildering to memory means at that moment we forget it all. It's just not there. When memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost. We do things we know we're not supposed to do, but in that moment, our intelligence just cannot discriminate. And then we fall down again into the material pool. It's due to neglect. Tani saravani samyamya yukta asita matpara. Tasehi asyandriyani tasya prakya pratishtata. The solution, we must restrain our senses. But simultaneously, we must fix our consciousness on Krishna. We can't just restrain our senses. We just can't say no, 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 no. We must say no, but we must divert our attention toward Krishna. Keep ourselves busy in Krishna consciousness. Idle mind is devil's workshop. When Maya attacks in this way, at the very beginning, at the time of contemplation, and as it grows, we should just start reading from Prabhupada's books, or start doing some active service to occupy our mind or senses, or most of all, connect ourselves back to Krishna. Fill our minds with His holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna, Hare.
That takes great determination. Unlike the other asuras, he was never envious of Vaishnavas. So when that envy comes into our heart toward another Vaishnav, we should not feed it by contemplating, oh yes, yes, and start the mind just thinking of more and more and more faults of that Vaishnav. What to speak of, speak against that Vaishnav. Or do something. Rather, we should check it. We should understand. This envy in my heart is an asura. It is a demon. Am I going to allow this asura to conquer me, to take me away from Krishna? Or am I going to fight this asura of envy? And how do we do that? By really trying to appreciate that Vaishnava, by philosophically understand that Krishna is empowering. If I'm envious of him, I'm envious of Krishna. Who am I to dictate to Krishna who to empower and who not to? We should feel Krishna is pleased. Krishna is conquered by one who feels joy in the success of others. Krishna is repelled, disgusted by one who is envious of the success of others. So whatever's in our heart, let us act according to what we should be doing. Let us speak what we should speak. That will show our sincerity to not be an asura. Sorry about that, but he was not agitated when he was in danger, because he had faith in Krishna. He considered everything material to be useless. Now this is very interesting, because he was 5 years old, but later on he was made the king. And kings have to deal with a lot of materialistic things. He was ruling his whole race. Yes? He had crown. In fact, Lord Brahma put crown on him. Yes? And set him on throne and palaces and everything else. How can you be running a kingdom when you think everything material is useless? Because he was seeing useless from the perspective of what's of real value. There's only one thing of real value forever, and that is bhakti. Devotional service. That is the only thing of value. Nehabikramanasusti pratyavayonya vidyate. Because any devotional service you render is forever. It's never lost. Anything else you earn will be lost. And the more you earn, the more you'll suffer when it's lost. Yes? While I was in the airplane yesterday, I saw news. Very interesting. Throughout the ages, India has been famous, or we can say infamous, for poverty. It's considered just dirty, poverty-stricken place. Of the billionaires in the world, in the top 10, there are more billionaires in the top 10 of the world in India than anywhere else in the world. America had 2 billionaires in the top 10. India had 4. And America was second place. That means India had twice as many billionaires than any other country in the world, as far as the 10 richest men in the world.
Hare Krishna.
And most of them live in Bombay. And there was another survey of the 25 dirtiest cities in the world. Bombay was number 7. Now, how many of you think that Bombay is cleaner than Delhi? Delhi was number 24. Now, this is a serious question I'm going to ask you. How many think Calcutta is dirtier than Bombay? Huh? Raise your hands. Well, your pride is finished. Calcutta was thoroughly examined. It's not even on the list. Not even on the list. Bombay's number 7. That means we're far filthier than Calcutta. What that has to do with class, I'll try to figure out a connection. But it was an interesting statistic. So all these billionaires, Prahlad Maharaj is saying everything material is useless. Because they'll lose it, either in this life or in death. And all those millions, in and of itself, could do nothing for the soul of anyone. But if you understand what is really useful is our relationship with God, in our devotion to God. That is the only useful thing. It's the only thing with permanence. It's the only thing that's real. Then yukta vairagya. Then we could use all of those things in a useful way because we're using them in devotion, in devotional service. Millions of dollars, billions of dollars, quadrillions of dollars, trillions of dollars, all everything could be used in Krishna service. And when it's used for the proper purpose with the right consciousness, then the thing itself is very useful. Material and spiritual. Everything in this world, Rupa Goswami describes, is spiritual by nature. Om Purnamada Purnamidam. Everything is coming from Krishna. Krishna is spiritual. How can darkness come out of the sun? Only when you turn away from the sun is there darkness. So everything is Krishna's energy. And if you use Krishna, if you're looking toward Krishna and using Krishna's energy for Krishna's pleasure, then everything is spiritual. When we use things looking into the darkness of the shadow, then everything is material. So for Prahlad Maharaj, everything material was useless. That means anything separated from Krishna is useless. And therefore, he could use the whole kingdom and all the resources of the kingdom in useful ways because it was in the service of God. And what is the greatest service of God we can perform in this world? To bring the spirit souls closer to God. That is God's mission in this world. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, it is described that the whole purpose of material existence is to facilitate the conditioned souls to go back home, back to Godhead. That's the reason of creation, to facilitate conditioned souls to go back to Godhead. In all the sufferings and all the heavens and all the hells and all the dualities and all the three modes and everything else is all just those facilities. Somehow or other, it's what conditioned souls need to go through to make that wise choice of going back home, back to Godhead. He was always controlled his senses and life air, and being of steady intelligence and determination, he subdued all lusty desires. This is the way to subdue lusty desires. We must, first of all, have steady intelligence. That comes by hearing regularly. Sravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. The first process of bhakti is sravanam, hearing. Hearing Harikatha, not hearing newspapers and all these other things. We may get some information that we could use in Krishna's service for those purposes. But we shouldn't enjoy them. Yes? We should enjoy, we should take inspiration in hearing about Krishna, hearing the philosophy of bhakti. And by nasta prayeshu bhadreshu nityam bhagavati sevaya, by hearing regularly, our intelligence is steady. But then with that steady intelligence, determination is required to practice it no matter what. Even in the face, or even when being confronted by temptation, danger, threat, we should be determined. Determined to be steady in our intelligence, to make the right choices. Recently in Mayapur, our godbrother Anuttama Prabhu defined the meaning of responsibility. Srila Prabhupada said, we make advancement in Krishna consciousness according to how we accept responsibility. So this is a very important word. We make advancement in Krishna consciousness according to how we accept responsibility. But how can you accept something if you do not know what it means? How many of us really know what responsibility means? He gave a very nice explanation. Responsibility is two words. Ability, yes, and response. Does that answer your question? So whatever comes in our life, whether it's temptations, from within or without, whether it's confrontations from within and without, how we respond is what will either elevate us or degrade us. Responsibility means our ability to respond in every possible situation in Krishna consciousness is how we make progress. The choice that we make in every provocative condition that may come in our life. Oftentimes in lectures of marriage, we say that don't worry about love because you don't know what love is, especially when it's between a man and woman. That's the most bewildering misconception of love, usually. Yes? Because it's based on physical features, it's based on personality traits, it's based on maybe theoretical astrological compatibilities. It's not about love. It may be about attraction. But that attraction is very much emotional and physical. And what happens with emotional, physical attractions? How long do they last? They may last a few hours. They may last a few days or maybe a few years. But then, familiarity breeds contempt. And soon, you know, the attraction is gone. The thrill of our relationship, that thrill, it's gone. Forever. But I start feeling some thrills coming from somebody else now. Marriage is about responsibility. Love, affection, attraction. It may be there, it may not be there. Don't worry about it. What's going to keep people together and keep people happy together is responsibility. That means our ability to respond to each other, to situations, to everything, in a way that is pleasing to Krishna. Living in brahmachari life. The amazing thing is I see as much love between the brahmacharis as I see husbands and wives, sometimes even more. Not physical, sexual, amorous, or any of those things, but a sense of real responsibility. We have responsibility to each other. So steady intelligence, determination. Determination in this sense really means determined to be responsible. To be able to respond properly in every situation. Now Srila Prabhupada in his purport, I guess this is the beginning of class, he is saying that a person is not qualified or disqualified simply by birth. It's a matter of how one takes these responsibilities. To live by divine characteristics. Prahlad Maharaj was born in a family of asuras. But yet, he possessed the qualities of a perfect Brahman. And anyone can become a fully qualified Brahman under the direction of a spiritual master. Prahlad Maharaj provided a vivid example of how to think of the spiritual master and accept his directions calmly. This is the key that opens the door to the spiritual world. All of these virtues and divine qualities of Prahlad Maharaj are all built on the foundation of his accepting the directions of his spiritual master. Yes. And if we study DNA and genes and all these things, coming from the semen of Hiranyakashipu is a very dangerous situation. And all the demigods are greater scientists than anyone on this earth. They know all this DNA stuff and how the genes work and how you adopt different qualities from your father and from your mother and everything like that. They very expert. Like father, like son. Chip off the old block. So they're dealing with Hiranyakashipu. And here comes another one. So they couldn't do anything when Hiranyakashipu was present because he was too powerful. So when he was away, like espionage, when he was away, they came and stole his wife. Kept her in the prison of their control with the sole aim to murder the child when it was born. Yes? Narada Muni came, said, actually, this child will be a great Mahavagwat. They trusted him. Narada Muni preached to the mother and the embryo. Prahlad, in the womb, surrendered his life to the teachings of Narada Muni. And he gave all credit to that only. He was preaching to his father. Sadhu manye suravarya dehinam sadasamad vignadiyam sadgrahat hitvatma patam grihamanda kupam vanam guto yad dharimashrayeta. Hiranyakashipu asked the little 5-year-old Prahlad, what is the best knowledge you have learned in school? Prahlad Maharaj says, one who considers this body to be the self and who considers the things related to the body to be mine is in illusion. He's in ignorance. My father, you should just give up all your ignorance and you're in a dark, deep well. He's the king of the universe, sitting on a throne. And Prahlad saying, you're in a dark, deep well. Who are you to tell me? Therefore, you should give it all up and go to Vrindavan and surrender to Krishna. Where did he learn this? When he was preaching to his little friends, they said, where did you learn this, Prahlad? You're in the same school as us. Certainly not at home. He said, everything I learned is from my Guru Maharaj. And when Narasingadev finally came and appeared only for the pleasure of Prahlad, liberated his father, Narasingadev asked Prahlad, ask any benediction. Prahlad Maharaj with folded palms, he said, I am nothing but an asura, born in an asura family. I'm the lowest. But due to the mercy of my Guru Maharaj, Narada Muni, that is my only qualification. So Prahlad Maharaj, under all circumstances, responsible. He responded to blasphemy. He responded to the temptations of being the king of the universe. He responded to dangers of being thrown in the ocean and thrown in fire and thrown under the feet of stampeding elephants, thrown into pits of venomous snakes. Any one of us, we just see a little snake. We don't even know if it's envious. And we run away. He was thrown into a pit of venomous snakes. How did he respond? By taking shelter of the directions of his spiritual master. That's all. He had that determination. Prahlad Maharaj provided a vivid example of how to think of the spiritual master and accept his directions calmly. Srila Prabhupada had such great faith in this principle. Otherwise, how could he go to the Western world? There were no Brahmins in the Western world. How could he give Brahminical initiation, even though he was condemned and even had death threats from people in India? Because he had complete faith that if one simply accepts the directions of the spiritual master, one is truly a Brahmin. One is a Vaishnav, greater than a Brahmin. That was the main thing that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was not allowed in the temples of Vrindavan. They locked the doors with his disciples. He had death threats. In Navadvipa, he was stoned by people who wanted to kill him, ridiculed, blasphemed. Why? For one reason. Because he was giving Brahminical initiation to people who were of lower castes. Why did he risk so much to do that? Why did Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada endure so much persecution for that? Because it is the truth. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Advaitacharya, they gave the most exalted position to Haridas Thakur, who was an outcast. Narottam Das Thakur was also death threats and all sorts of blasphemy because he was Kayashta, which was considered a Shudra by many. And he was giving initiation to Brahmins. The heart of a Vaishnava is something very deep. Today is the disappearance day of Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. He appeared in this world sometime in the mid or late 1700s. And that was in Bangladesh. After he became a Babaji, he would spend half the year in Vrindavan. He lived actually many years in Vrindavan. And then later on, he would sometimes be half the year Vrindavan, half the year Navadvipa. He lived at Suryakund. Many beautiful stories. But we don't have so much time. I would just like to share a couple stories that are very much illustrating the principles of these verses we're reading today. He lived to over 147 years old. He would be half the year Vrindavan, half the year Navadvipa. Bhaktivinod Thakur, he on a trip to Vrindavan first met Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj and in his heart of heart accepted him as his prominent guru in life. Even declared him to be the commander-in-chief
of all the Vaishnava community.
When Jagannath Das Babaji was later living in Bengal, place I think Amalgar, Bhakti Vinod Thakur went to visit him there and deepened the quality of their association. Bhakti Vinod Thakur invited him to come to Navadvip. He was living in Kulia area. He was very old. He had a servant named Bihari. And Bihari was very strong. He would carry Jagannath Das Babaji in a basket on his shoulder. And when they were going from Amalagar to Navadvip, Bihari Lal arranged for a simple but nice guest house for him to stay in. When they arrived, Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj said, "I will not stay in a guest house. Let us live under a tree near the bank of the Ganges." So he was living under a tree. Bhakti Vinod Thakur built him a nice bhajan kutir right there near that tree. It was built by Bhakti Vinod Thakur. And then some other wealthy people, they built some other little huts close by for his disciples, other Babajis, to live. Jagannath Das Babaji would love to go with Bhakti Vinod Thakur from village to village to promote the chanting of the holy names. That's practically all he did day and night, is chant the holy names, japa, kirtan. That was his life, his soul. And serving Vaishnavas. One time in his hut, he was doing Madhukari.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna Prabhu, what are you doing? He doesn't know. Okay.
So one street sweeper, obviously Shudra caste at the best, a street sweeper gave some roti to Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. And he very, very gratefully accepted it and ate it. So other Vaishnavas began to criticize him. "What kind of Vaishnav? He's taking cooked food from the hands of a street sweeper? Lower caste?" So they went and they challenged Jagannath Das Babaji. Why you have done this? You have taken grains cooked by a street sweeper? Jagannath Das Babaji responded very boldly. He said, "There is no higher purification than the dust of Navadvip Dham. Every grain of dust of Navadvip is more valuable than all the wealth in Brahma's creation. We read in all the scriptures, we read in the writings of the great saints of how purifying it is to roll in the dust of Navadvip, to put the dust of Navadvip on your head, to eat the dust of Navadvip. Well, these street sweepers, they are so fortunate. Day and night, they're covered with the dust of Navadvip. Who will be more fortunate and pure than them? Therefore, they are true Vaishnavas. They are real Vaishnavas because the dust of Navadvipa is covering their bodies 24 hours a day. And they are performing such menial service to Sri Navadvipa Dham. Therefore, I have taken their rotis for my purification. Another time he was eating, the Hari Lal would put a big plate in front of him and bring him some prasad. He would be eating the prasad. And not far away, there was a dog that had babies. Some people say there were five little baby dogs, puppies. And these puppies would see a plate of prasad as he'd eating. And they'd run up and start eating off the plate with him as he was eating. So after seeing this, the next day, Bihari Lal chased the dogs away. Jagannath Das Babaji was about to start his prasad. He asked his servant, "Where are the dogs?" He said, "I am fasting until I have the association of these dogs." So he would not touch anything. Wouldn't eat. And then Bihari Lal brought the dogs back. They were just gathered around in a circle around the plate, and Jagannath Das Babaji was eating very blissfully. And he called out, "These are not ordinary dogs. These are dogs of the holy Dham. All glories to the dogs of the holy Dham of Navadvip." On another occasion, Bihari Lal was carrying him on a basket on his shoulder, and a wealthy man came and gave a donation of many rupees. He handed them to Bihari Lal. Bihari Lal handed them up to Jagannath Das Babaji in the basket. Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj said, "Go back to that wealthy man." They went back. Jagannath Das Babaji said, "Take this money back." He said, "You gave me only a few rupees, and I feel the weight of it is so heavy. How will my servant survive? And how can I stay on the basket holding this money? It has so much weight. I can imagine you have so many rupees. How much of a weight is on your life?" Hare Krishna. At other times, he would accept donations. One time, someone offered 200 rupees. Now, this is about 150 years ago. How much do you think 200 rupees is worth today? Anyone like to guess? Sachinandan, Sachira. Crores. Anyways, Jagannath Das Babaji took the 200 rupees, gave it to Bihari Lal, and said, "Buy 200 rupees worth of rasgullas." Now, according to Sachidananda Prabhu, I don't know. He says that's crores of rupees of rasgullas. Maybe I cannot question because I'm not a rupee person. But he took all that large amount of money and bought rasgullas, and Jagannath Das Babaji said, "Feed them to the cows of Navadvip, but don't give a single one to those bogus Babajis." The cows of the holy Dham. And his humility. going back and forth. When he was about 146 years old, he was living in Suryakund and Vrindavan, Brajbhumi, and he was going to go back to Navadvipa. So the Brijabasis and the great Babajis who were there, there were many great Paramhamsas living there, they were saying, why are you so old? Why are you leaving Vrindavan? How could you leave Vrindavan? You're so old and you're very, very old now. Why not stay here? You're in the holiest of all holy places. You're in Suryakund, just close to Radhakund and Sri Brajbhumi. Jagannath Das Babaji, from the heart of his heart, he said, because I am a very fallen soul. Vrindavan is the place for the highest Paramahamsas. It is the most intimate part of Krishna's Leela. And any offenses that are committed in Vrindavan are very serious. But I am very fallen. Let me live and give up my life in Navadvip, because that is the place of my beloved lords, Gauranga and Nityananda. They forgive all offenses. They give love of Krishna. They give true realization of Vrindavan, even to the most fallen souls like me. See, let me return to Navadvip. That was his humility. He was guru of so many great, great souls. He was a disciple of Madhusudan Das Babaji, who was just two or three lines after Baladev Vidyabhushan. So many great souls he initiated. Great souls like Bhaktivinod Thakur, who was writing prolific literatures, who was spreading the glories of the holy name like no one else in centuries. They were his disciples. And yet he was considering himself the most fallen soul, not worthy to live in Vrindavan, but felt his only hope was to be in the dust of Navadvip, seek calling out for the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu and Lord Chaitanya. That was his last day in Vrindavan. And of course, we know the story. He was so exalted by all the sages and Vaishnavas that when Bhaktivinod Thakur had that vision of where the true birthplace of Lord Chaitanya was, now this was strongly controversial, even to this day. Because in the Kuliagram side of Navadvip, which is now the town of Navadvip, there has been for hundreds of years a place that has been worshipped as the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, from his examination of scriptures and ancient maps and discussing with very, very elevated divine Paramahamsas, he realized it cannot be the place. Vaishnavas just found that place and created it because they would get pilgrims, they would get money and so many other things. And or perhaps maybe just so that there would be some focus on Lord Chaitanya's birthplace. But he found the real place was on the other side of the Ganga. He had a vision of light emanating from that place. And he went there and saw all tulsi plants growing. Although it was the property of Muslims, it was just a field still. In that place, it was only tulsi. Nothing else would grow but tulsi. And from ancient maps, from ancient scriptures, he was convinced this is the place. But his final confirmation had to come from the realization of Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. He was very old.
Bihari Lal brought him the basket. Bhaktivinoda Thakur set him down. Jagannath Das Babaji leaped out of his basket, dancing ecstatically, crying out the holy names of Sachinandan Gaurhari. Then Bhaktivinoda understood, yes, this is the place. Jagannath Das Babaji said, with all certainty, this is the appearance place of our beloved Lord, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Today is also the disappearance day of His Holiness Srila Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj. It's already 11 o'clock and Srimad Bhagavatam is way beyond its boundaries. Should I speak a few words about Tamal Krishna? What can I say about this very loving, kind God brother who personally showered me with such immense affection, kindness, encouragement. I believe in 1968 he first came to Srila Prabhupada along with his best friend who was later to be called Vishnujana Swami Maharaj. They came to San Francisco and obviously a great saint from a previous life, he just immediately committed himself 100% to Srila Prabhupada and to Srila Prabhupada's mission. Now in these days there was not much of an institution of ISKCON. There was a little storefront on the 22nd Avenue in New York, and there was a little storefront in San Francisco. In San Francisco in those days, I don't know if anybody wore dhotis or shaved their heads. It was very simple. But he joined there. And just by meeting Srila Prabhupada, hearing the philosophy, chanting the holy names, tasting prasad, committed his life. And practically from the first day, although he was very, very surrendered to serve as the servant of the servant of the servant, Prabhupada saw in him a leader. He was willing to commit himself. He was willing to take any type of risk to serve his Gurudev. Srila Prabhupada would often say, nothing great can be done without taking risk. If you're not willing to take risk, you will remain mediocre at the best. Prabhupada took such immense risks. Getting on the Jaladuta with 7 rupees. Or 40 rupees. 40 rupees. Without knowing if anyone would even be there to receive him. The age of 70. That was a risk. To stay in New York City, despite everybody telling him to go home, with no success, was a risk. When they gave him that little storefront Mukunda Maharaj, Janaki, Prabhu, Mataji, and they told him, we can help you with the first month's rent, but we don't think we'll be able to help you beyond that. He didn't know anybody. And yet he signed the contract, took the storefront in Manhattan. That was a risk. Went to San Francisco, to London. Signed for the land in Bombay when he didn't even have any money. He just had a fee. He signed the contract giving a tiny bit. He had to pay the rest by a certain date. He had no access, no means. He took risks. Hare Krishna. Well, there's early devotees, including Tamal Krishna Goswami. They just had such faith. And although Prabhupada's disciples were rapidly growing, more centers, more places, more and more and more people were joining, Srila Prabhupada had such trust in the commitment, the devotion, and the abilities of Tamal Krishna Goswami. Quite amazing. Devotees were doing Harinam Sankirtan. That was all ISKCON was in those early days. There was nothing else. There were no books to distribute, no magazines to distribute. Temples were little storefronts. They would just go out all day, practically every day, and just do Nam Sankirtan. You've heard about those days? Srila Prabhupada ordered Tamal Krishna Goswami to organize first-class Sankirtan parties. First time. Most important service of all of ISKCON. He put him in charge. And where people were just, you know, devotees were just going out, all scattered out, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. He actually organized them, had them dressed in a proper way, and had them playing the right rhythms and singing the right melodies and going to the right places. He actually organized and systematized Nam Sankirtan. And not only that, he propagated it. He inspired them. He encouraged them with such faith to go out every day, all day, and do Nam Sankirtan. And it was so incredibly successful that Srila Prabhupada told Tamal Krishna Goswami to go to all the other centers in ISKCON and organize Nam Sankirtan the same way. And he went to Los Angeles, later went to London, New York. Here's New York, all these, like, the senior people, and he's coming to teach them how to do Nam Sankirtan on Prabhupada's instruction. Amazing. And then there was back to Godheads. Devotees were doing Nam Sankirtan and distributing back to Godheads. Well, he just took it so seriously, this distribution of back to Godhead. He was organizing, you know, back to Godhead distribution. At that time, when it first came out, and even a couple years later, the distribution was practically nothing. Tamal Krishna Goswami was determined that he would organize thousands of back to Godheads to be distributed. He told Prabhupada, this is what I want to do for you. And he did it. He was distributing more back to Godheads than the whole rest of the movement put together under his inspiration. So Srila Prabhupada told him to go from center to center to inspire people and to train people how to distribute back to Godhead. And then sometime later, Prabhupada started just printing his books.
And Srila Prabhupada had that faith and that trust in the determination, the commitment, and the enthusiasm of Tamal Krishna. At that time, he was Grihastha, I believe. And he just systemized, organized, and inspired book distribution. Very much. Various parts of the world. Spearheaded. Prabhupada called him to London. Called him to various centers in America. Nam Sankirtan, Back to Godhead, book distribution. Helped him organize the temples. Develop standards of cleanliness for the temples. Deity worship. He was really like Prabhupada's right-hand man in so many ways. Then when Prabhupada came to India, that was the most difficult project. He called for some of his disciples to come. At the end of 1970, they arrived. They were having nice programs. Devotees were amazingly received by the people of India. But as far as organizing a movement here, anything the devotees tried to do, they were getting cheated. As far as any land, any money dealings, always getting cheated. And devotees were always getting sick. It was very, very difficult. And there was nothing. Srila Prabhupada called Tamal Krishna Goswami because he had such faith and trust in his commitment and his abilities. And his allegiance to do things. Prabhupada had great trust in Tamal Krishna Goswami's to do things exactly according to the parampara way. And he put Tamal Krishna Maharaj in probably the most difficult service in ISKCON at that time, to be the GBC for all of India when there was nothing here. Hare Krishna. And for several years he did it. Prabhupada really was very much in touch with him. Prabhupada more or less was like the GBC. But Tamal Krishna Goswami was his right hand. And there is that famous story where Tamal Krishna Goswami wanted to take sannyas. And there was a big controversy over him taking sannyas. And he was so determined. So determined. He just wanted to give his life everything. No distractions from Prabhupada's service. Prabhupada gave him sannyas. And he saw how Prabhupada loved book distribution. Loved book distribution. So he wanted to go to the West to expand book distribution. Prabhupada blessed him. He went to America, joined up again with his old friend Vishnu Janaswami Maharaj, who was then traveling around mostly doing dramas and mantra rock shows and Nam Sankirtan. And Tamal Krishna Goswami, from one little bus, he organized an army of book distributors. They were making, just through their preaching and book distribution, they were bringing dozens and dozens and dozens of new people right out of the secular world and training them all to be book distributors. Soon there was probably about 100 book distributors. 4 major buses, about 25 vans, just crisscrossing the whole of America. And broke all records for book distribution. It's amazing. Srila Prabhupada called him for so many projects. Yesterday I was in Calcutta.
Prabhupada was struggling to get some land in Mayapur.
Very difficult. There were forces both from within and without that were determined to block Prabhupada from getting any land in Mayapur. And he sent many people, but nobody could succeed. Then from Calcutta, he sent Tamal Krishna Goswami. With the money. No checks or credit cards. Cash. Rupees. Now, in those days, not an easy thing. Mayapur was not what it is today. It was a land of dacoits and a land of all kinds of other things. There were some Gaudiya Mathas there, which were very beautiful and wonderful. But still, it was a very dangerous. And to travel there and back by bus. So Prabhupada took a piece of cloth, like a copan, and wrapped it around Tamal Krishna Goswami's waist, and then rolled up all the money and put it in that, in different parts of it. So it was like all around his waist, all this rupees, to buy land. Prabhupada personally showed him how to tie it and keep it secure so nobody could see it. So he went and he spent days and days, and finally, you know, he convinced the people to sell him the land. And all those rupees, they were mostly in small notes. Because Prabhupada didn't have big notes. He had to write down the serial number of every note in order for the transaction to be acceptable. He did it. He got the deed. It's impossible. And in the middle of the night, he came back to Calcutta and he saw Prabhupada's light was still on. He was translating his books. And usually no one disturbed Prabhupada when he was translating his books. But Tamal Krishna Goswami knew how this would make Prabhupada happy. And he came into the room, offered his prostrated obeisances. On his knees, he said, Srila Prabhupada, the land in Mayapur is yours. And then handed Srila Prabhupada the deed of ownership. I don't remember the exact words, but I think Prabhupada said, I was waiting for you. Prabhupada was so very, very pleased. Very, very pleased. And longer than anyone else, he served as Prabhupada's personal secretary. And during Prabhupada's last year in this world, he especially had Tamal Krishna Goswami, his personal secretary, organizing everything around him until his departure. On a personal level, there are so many memories that spring from my heart. I remember in 1994, sometime around that, Radha Gopinath Temple had just come back. And there was a North American GBC meeting in Dallas, which was Tamal Krishna Goswami's headquarters in America. There were dozens of sannyasis, probably a dozen GBCs, all temple presidents from every part of America, all the senior devotees, many from all over the world were there for this conference.
He arranged everyone, their rooms, their accommodations. An amazing thing, he gave me a room right next to his. Not only next to his, but in his own quarters. He had a quarters with like two or three rooms in his quarters. And he gave me that room next to his. And every morning, devotees were taking breakfast prasad in Prasadam Hall. He would call me personally to take breakfast prasad with him. And usually to take lunch with him. And we would just discuss Krishna and Prabhupada and so many things. Sometimes for hours and hours, he would just share his heart and allow me to share my heart. It was very special, very sweet. And one night we did Nam Sankirtan. Forgive me for telling this story, but it's just shows the sweetness of his affection. We did Nam Sankirtan with all the leaders of ISKCON in the streets of Dallas. And he took me right up front with him to dance in the front. And the next morning there was a newspaper article. And there was a photograph of the kirtan. And I was right in front. And he called me into his room. He was smiling ecstatically. And he showed me the photo. And he said, look at the person in front. He looks just like Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Always trying to encourage his god brothers. When he procured this land at Govardhan, he would call me in Bombay. Said, "What are you busy now?" I said, "I'm very busy. I have this problem, and I have this program, and that program, and so many other programs arranged." Because in those days, most of you were not around in those days. But in those days, usually we gave class every morning, and we had a late night program 7 days a week. Do you remember Govinda Prabhu? Mahaprabhu, you remember? Every night of the week, we'd have programs. And no program in Bombay is not late. Because nobody comes till late. And nobody lets you leave till later. So we had schedules like months before, every night, this place, this place, this place, this place, 7 days a week, programs all day, going to different people's houses during the day. So everything was, and he said, "Are you busy?" I said, "I'm very busy." He said, "Well, I want you to come to Govardhan. I want to discuss something with you." As he was building that Bhaktivedanta ashram. I said, "Maharaj, when should I come?" He said, "Today." He said, "But I have so many other programs." He said, no, you have no other programs. You come today." I said, "I want you to come today. I need you to come today. Come today." I said, "I'm coming." So I came on that day. And we did Govardhan Parikrama together. And then at night, sitting very, very high up in the roof, till late at night, we were just discussing the glories of Govardhan together. It's very sweet. And one year in Janmashtami, we both went to Hungary, New Brajadam. And every morning, every evening, there were so many devotees from all directions who come to Hungary for Janmashtami. New Brajadam is one of the most successful, wonderful centers in all of ISKCON, headed by His Holiness Shivaram Swami Maharaj. Amazing vision, amazing culture of Vaishnavism there. It's beautiful. wonderful deities, wonderful cows, wonderful preaching, wonderful devotees, everything. So Tamal Krishna Goswami and I would dance together for hours and hours every morning, every evening. And one day I was so much dancing with him. One day I picked up the mridanga to play. And he came up to me, he said, "You're not going to play that, are you?" I said, "Yes, I am." He took the mridanga out of my hands and took me by the hand and he said, "Will you dance with me?" So we danced. I can say I've never danced in kirtan with greater pleasure than dancing with Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj. It was very special. In fact, yesterday in Calcutta, one of his disciples said he has a video of us dancing together. So I knew it. And when he came to Mayapur, there was so much to be said. So many devotees were brought to this movement by him, directly by his amazing, powerful preaching. At a certain point, he was inspired to go to college to establish Krishna consciousness in the academic circles. So he went to school. He was an undergraduate in a very prestigious temple in Texas. And nothing like this. He's in his 50s. And he's going to school with, you know, people who are 19, 20, 21, 22 years old. And he's sitting in the classes with them. And he was the number one student in the entire college. Number one student. Whatever he did, he just did it, like, perfectly. Number one student in the time. He was an undergraduate. And the college gave him an office amongst all the other professors. Unheard of. Did you ever hear anything like this? Undergraduate, they gave him an office where all the other professors had their offices. Yeah, undergraduate in academic conferences with the highest PhDs of America and the world and the National Council of, you know, Professors, whatever it is, academia. They were calling him to read his papers. He graduated very quickly, every year, the number one student in the entire college. Now, usually when you're older, it's harder to learn. That's why people go to college when they're young. He got a scholarship to Cambridge University, skipped over master's, went right to his PhD. Also, Prabhupada searched his heart, obviously, at seeing how to make the world Krishna conscious. Communist countries were the most dangerous and the most difficult. Krishna consciousness was expanding like anything in North America, South America, Australia, different parts of Africa, Europe, even parts of the Middle East. Prabhupada went to Tehran in Iran and preached there. But communism, that was very, very difficult. Prabhupada himself personally went to Russia to establish Krishna consciousness. There was one place left, China. Nothing there. Prabhupada sent Tamal Krishna Goswami to go to China to spread Krishna consciousness. And he did. He established a foundation and made it grow. Do you remember? A few weeks ago, about 20 devotees from China came here to Radha Gopinath Temple. There was about 100 devotees from China in Mayapur not long back. There are thousands of people becoming Krishna consciousness in China. It's all underground. And most of the major preachers are the disciples of Tamal Krishna Goswami. This year in Mayapur during the GBC meetings, they showed the new books being published. There's 3 full-fledged books of Srila Prabhupada that have been translated and published by the BBT in large quantities in the Chinese language, done by the disciples of Tamal Krishna Goswami. And in his last days in Sri Mayapur, GBC meetings, they're quite rigorous because discussing so many intense topics. It's a wonderful association of wonderful devotees, but it's very, very strenuous. 2 weeks of meetings, usually all day, every day, and then meetings after the meetings, and meetings before the meetings. Well, every night, he called anyone who wanted to come to his room for kirtan. And he established a tradition. There are devotees who to this day say they were the most intense, ecstatic, emotional kirtans they've ever experienced in their lives. He was inspiring them to come kirtan. And during those times, I was given the fortune of spending many, many hours just alone with him discussing so many subjects of how to serve Srila Prabhupada. Sometimes we'd go to Ganga together in the afternoon to take bath. And then on this day, the disappearance day of Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj and Rasikananda Prabhu, he unexpectedly, suddenly left us in Phuliagram, in the place of Haridas Thakur. Srila Prabhupada, whenever there was some urgent, important project, Srila Prabhupada would usually call Tamal Krishna Goswami. So wherever Prabhupada is, there must have been some important project, because he called Tamal Krishna Goswami back to his personal loving service. Yes, these great devotees very much magnify the qualities of Prahlad Maharaj that we find here in Srimad Bhagavatam. In regard to His Holiness Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj, I would like to repeat the last sentence of today's purport, which I feel very much give light to His life. Prabhupada says, Prahlad Maharaj provided a vivid example how to think of the spiritual master and accept his directions. Thank you very much.
Srila Prabhupada ki.